Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of The Awesome with Cody. I'm Cody. This month's topic is going to be a little different than I originally thought, but that's okay. You'll learn more about that later. Anyways, so this month's topic, in honor of The Shape of Water being more released fully, I guess. I think it's full release now. And I'm planning to go see it as of right now, tomorrow, when this goes up, I'll be seeing it with the guys. We'll talk about it on the regular podcast as well as I'll come back. But this week, this month, we're going to do Guillermo del Toro movies. So today, I chose Pan's Labyrinth for a couple reasons. One, I don't know if it's a lesser known movie of his, but I think it's one of his best. And also helped kind of better visualize his worlds, I think, more than other stuff that had been out before that, before this movie had come out. For those who don't know Guillermo del Toro, he's done quite a few movies. His best known first movie would be either, I would say, Blade 2 or Hellboy. Both those are well known. Blade 2 is, a lot of people think it's the least of the best, or it's like the worst of those three movies. Really, if you ask me, none of them are terrible. The third one's probably the weakest movie. But the second movie is actually my favorite of the Blade movies because of the villain in it. The villain they have in those ones is awesome, but we're not going to talk about that today. We're going to talk about Pan's Labyrinth. So Pan's Labyrinth is my favorite Guillermo del Toro movie. I haven't seen Shape of Water yet, so I can't tell you if that's my favorite or not. But of all of his movies that he's directed, Pan's Labyrinth is my favorite. Visually, the movie is unbelievable. The story is dark as can be. The acting is fantastic, especially by the little kids in it. And of course, my favorite part of the whole thing is Doug Jones, because Doug Jones does well. He plays a pantheon of characters throughout the Guillermo del Toro universe of movies. He was in Mimic. He was in Hellboy. He's done so many things. He's one of the best creature actors, I would say, for sure, because of his long, lanky body and the way he moves, which is, you know, spectacular. Besides Hellboy and, I mean, obviously this movie, I'm trying to think of some other ones. I'm going to look at his list real quick. He's been in a lot of things. I'm trying to think of some stuff other people know. He was Silver Surfer in the Fantastic Four: Rise of the Silver Surfer. Not a great movie by any means, is it? But still, he was pretty awesome as a Silver Surfer. Obviously, not he did motion capture. He did a little bit. I think there was a little bit of practical in there too, but not a whole lot. More recently, though, he is in the Star Trek. What is that show called? Star Trek Discovery. He's one of the main characters on that, so that's pretty cool. He's been in all sorts of TV shows. He's awesome, just in general. He was most recently for Del Toro, besides being in The Shape of Water, because he plays the amphibian man in that. He was in Crimson Peak. He played the ghost of the mother, and the Lady Beatrice Sharp. So that's him in there. I mean, he's amazing. Little story about him while we're talking about Doug Jones. I met him at Comic-Con a bunch of years ago, and I'll post a picture on the Instagram and the Facebook and everything, where he was obsessed with my beard. And if you guys know what I look like, I have a fairly large beard. And he comes up and he goes, "Can I?" And he has an accent. He says, "Can I not an accent, I shouldn't say not an accent. He has a very particular way of speaking. He's very articulate. And he says, "Oh, can I touch your beard?" And I was like, "Well, yeah, I guess you can touch it." And he takes his fingers and he runs it into my beard, and it's hilarious. And then he lifts my hat up. I wear a flat cap a lot of times, and he kisses me on the forehead. And then he's like, "Oh, you want to take a picture?" And I was like, "Yes, I do." And then when he goes to take a picture, he winds his hands and his fingers into one of his hands into my beard again while we take the picture. It's hilarious. You'll see it on if you want to look on the Instagram and the Facebook for the show page. I'll put it up there. It's just pretty funny. He was so enamored that people knew who he was, because like he was just there, and I was like, "Oh man, like Doug Jones," and he's like, "Oh hey," he was a really nice guy. Also, funny story about Comic-Con and Guillermo del Toro. My friend Keith, fan of the show, both this one and the regular show, we go to Comic-Con in San Diego pretty much every year together. And one year we're going to a panel, and sure enough, coming down the escalators from where we're going is Guillermo del Toro. And we both yell, "Guillermo del Toro," and he reaches out and he grabs Keith's hand, and he's just shaking, and they both kind of turn because Guillermo's bodyguards and everything are pushing him one way, and we're going the other way, and he's just got wrenched onto Keith's hand, and he's just shaking it furiously. He was so excited to be recognized. It was hilarious. One of the best stories from Comic-Con for sure. I have many stories from Comic-Con, but that's one of my favorite ones because of the just how excited he was for us to be excited to see him. It was just amazing. So that's the Guillermo del Toro / Doug Jones story from Comic-Con. Anyways, back to Pan's Labyrinth. If you don't know the story, it is a dark fairy tale that a little girl believes in, and she uses it as an escape for escapism from the atrocities that are happening around her in the real world, which is a Nazi occupation of her homeland. And the reason it's so dark is the fairy tale she believes in comes to life, but it's beyond what she knows from the book, and it's very scary. So in this particular movie, the creatures that inhabit this world are not the happy-go-lucky character or creatures that you would see, that you normally associate with fairy tales. Are not very, you know, they're happy. One of them, the Pale Man, who's one of the ones, the one of the characters that Doug Jones plays, he is this creature who visually, he's amazing. He's got droopy skin all over his body that's hanging down from his arms and everything. He's very, very slim, but it looks like he was like fat at one point. So he's lost a lot, burned off a lot of weight or whatever. And so the skin just hangs off him. It's really creepy. Like his wing, like, you know, flaps under his arms and whatever. But he has no eyes on his face. They're on the palms of his hands. So to see you, he has to hold his hands up to block his eye, to block in front of his face. You can see. So it's very creepy look anyways. But Doug plays another character called the Fawn, or referred to as the Fawn. And is a, if you don't know what a Fawn is, a creature, it's got, you know, it's a humanoid goat in a way. Very goat features, the backwards legs and the tail and the fur horns, all that fun stuff, but stands upright and looks like, you know, more like a humanoid. He guides Ophelia through this mythical world she's going into, and it's one of those things. The story, I'm going to spoil it just because, you know, I'm going to go by Anthony's recommendation, just ruin everything that I talk about. If you haven't seen it, you know, it's still worth going to check out. Don't just, you know, like, "Oh, well, I guess Cody told me all the cool stuff. I told you all the awesome stuff." But you should go see, you should watch it for these things for yourselves, especially because the way that he does these movies. Oh, this is subtitled. You can get it. I think you can get this dubbed, but it's subtitled. So just be warned if you're not a big fan of reading your movies. It is. You can get it dubbed over in English, but it's either way. I mean, I'm not going to criticize anybody who doesn't want to read a movie and they'd rather just watch it and listen to it, it's fine. I'm not one of those people who's, oh, you have to watch it and it's natural. No, don't worry about that. Watch it however you want. It's amazing no matter what. Obviously, if you're not a big, if you're not a fast reader, there's a lot of things you miss, and it's very story heavy. So you need to hear a lot of that. So watch the dubbed one. I don't give a shit. Just watch it because it's awesome. Anyways, so the Fawn helps Ophelia, who's a little girl, or Princess Moana, escape the real world, and she has to do these tasks, I guess you could really say, to basically gain or grant her asylum and escape. And I'm sorry, it's not Nazis. I totally forgot what this was. It's Civil War in Spain. It's a Spanish Civil War that's going on. That's why they're the war-torn area. And there's, like, soldiers there and all stuff. I don't want to say Nazis. I was thinking Hellboy again. Excuse me. I didn't mean that. Anyways, so Ophelia has to complete these three tasks to gain access for her and her little sister to escape into this fantasy realm so she can escape the horrors that are going around going on around her in the real world. So you get this, obviously, escapism, but you also, to me, it was always like a, is it real, is it not real, kind of thing. If you watch it, you'll understand the whole meaning behind it, but when you watch the whole thing, it'll make more sense to you than me babbling about the, does it mean she has escaped? Anyway, so she has these three tasks that she has to do to gain access to for asylum for her and her little brother. I said little sister earlier. I'm all over the place. But everyone has a creature that she has to deal with. There's a large toad. There is the pale man. I want to say the other one is another creature that she has to escape, right? Or is it the third one is no, the third, it has to do with the Fawn, if I remember. Man, it's been a while since I watched this. I should have watched this before I talked about it, but, you know, whatever. Anyway, she has to do these three tasks, and they're all kind of terrible. She has to do these things, but they all have these moral kind of stance to it. Like the pale man, she has to go in, and it's, she has to have willpower not to eat any of the food, because she eats any of the food, then he comes alive and he has a hunger for eating children. So that's what he does. So it's an interesting little thing. You got a lot of that weird shit in there. But the visuals are amazing. I wonder if this is in 4K now. That's a good question. Man, it was older though. I say older, it was fucking made in 2006, it was 12 years old now. Actually, that's kind of old. But, I mean, it's the visuals in it are amazing, the effects, and there is some CGI in it, but a lot of it is animatronics and makeup. A lot of the stuff he uses are based on some of the fairy tales. So I should say this. So this is the fucked up part about this, right? So the story of Pan's Labyrinth is a story he wrote. Guillermo del Toro has this notebooks that he writes in, and has all these crazy ideas in it. Some he's never going to get made unless Netflix gets a hold. Wow, Netflix, you should do that. That's a good idea. I'm gonna put that out in the world. It's just, go to Guillermo and be like, you're already doing with the cartoons. Just go to him and be like, you want to make some crazy shit? All the crazy shit you want? Let's do it. Because his first movie, Cronus, is about lesbian vampires, if I'm not mistaken. It's been a long time since that movie. Like, I've seen that one, like, a long, long time. But Guillermo del Toro tells this story about this fairy tale that he grew up listening to, like was being told, that this is based on, which is crazy. Because if this is the kind of fairy tales that like this dude's getting told to, like when he's little, that's super messed up, man. I don't know a whole lot of fairy tales from Mexico. But if this is the kind of stuff that they tell kids when they're younger, like we get the Disney-fied versions of some of like the crazy ones, like, you know, Robin Hood and all those things like that, these fairy tales like, you know, Rapunzel and blah, blah, blah. This dude, if this is the stuff they're telling little kids in Mexico, man, that is rough. I mean, there's a child-eating monster that if you steal his food, he's going to eat you. Like, and to see the visuals, if I were a little kid and this is what I saw, man, nope, not at all. So basically, back to the story where Guillermo got this from. He's been working on it because he writes in these notebooks these crazy ideas that he has, and then he flips through the books when he wants the notebooks when he wants an idea, and he grabs a hold of one and then just flushes it out. Now, a lot of his movies that he's made aren't his original properties. Blade, Hellboy, those ones aren't his. I don't think he wrote Mimic either. Did he write Mimic? I'm not a big fan of Mimic. It's a cool movie, but I don't like that movie. It's all right. It's not terrible, but I don't think he. I don't know. He did write it. He wrote the screen. He co-wrote the screenplay and the story with Matthew Robbins. That's interesting. I guess I kind of knew that. Matthew Robbins, by the way, if you don't know who he is, wrote a lot of amazing stuff. He wrote THX 1138, which is one of George Lucas's first movies, or is his first movie, I should say. He wrote Jaws. He wrote on, where's the other one? Let's see. Well, he co-wrote Crimson Peak with Guillermo del Toro, and Don't Be Afraid of the Dark. But yeah, he's done a lot of things. He directed a few things too. I don't know if anything's, he wrote and directed Dragon Slayer. Do you guys remember, we talked about Dragon Slayer on the other podcast way back in the day. As a torture theater, because I forced Mike and Joe to watch it, and I think they still hate me because of it, but you know, whatever. Anyways, so a lot of that stuff that he created is his own weird, twisted mind, and it comes from these notebooks, which I'd love to be able to see some of these notebooks, because I mean, holy shit, the stuff he makes up, the stuff that makes it to audiences is the more tame, I guess you could say, stuff that, you know, he's even admits that like some of the shit he writes down in the notebook is just not ever going to be made because it's so fucking weird. But he tells the story on of this fawn that he had these dreams, these waking dreams, like these like delusions of, I guess. So on the Charlie Rose show, that he told the story that every midnight, he would wake up and a fawn would gradually step out behind his grandfather's clock, the grandfather's clock, so the big clock in the way. Originally, the fawn was supposed to be classic half man, half goat fawn, but he changed it to be a little more mystical, I guess you could say. I don't know, really weird. Anyways, so he tells this story about like how he had these dreams of this creature in his own house. Like he saw these things, and I was like, well, it's kind of fucked up, man. Like you need to search for some help. Cause you know, it's not good. Anyways, back to the story. So Ophelia, real quick, I'm going to run through the story real fast. Ophelia, who has a half brother, she decides that she needs to somehow save her little brother. Her mother is dying because of the the birth, she had some complications. When she gives birth, I believe she dies giving birth to her, to Ophelia's brother, half-brother. And then so Ophelia feels very, obviously, you know, attached to the child and goes on this quest, whatever you want to call it, to help, to get it, to escape. The other visuals in this, like, there's these fairies, that she sees, and they're the ones lead her to the labyrinth. I mean, it's just so much I want to talk about, and I feel bad spoiling it. I know Anthony says just fuck it, just do it, but like, man, it's so good. I need to watch this movie again, like, soon. Should have watched it tonight. Oh well, it's still awesome. But visually, again, amazing. Story is fucked up. Ophelia, the actress who plays Ophelia, is tremendous. Not even to try that name because it's super messed up. I'm going to super mess it up. Ivana Baquero, I think it is. Maybe I didn't mess it up. I don't know. Whatever. She's tremendous in it. The story is super dark, like I said. There's not a whole lot of other actors in it you're going to recognize. You might even recognize Doug Jones if you don't know who exactly he is. But he plays, again, two of the characters in this. He plays the pale man. And I'll post pictures like I have been on Instagram, so you can kind of see the characters a little too if you want to flip over there to the podcast page and look at them there. It's super crazy how kind of ridiculous that this gets, and how dark. I can't stress how dark it actually is. I may watch this tonight before I go to bed, which is probably a terrible idea, but oh well. I don't care. I'm crazy. I guess that's going to be it for this week's episode of the Guillermo del Toro Awesome Fest. As I've talked about many things, the main thing I talked about tonight or today on this episode was Pan's Labyrinth. Pan's Labyrinth is a Spanish movie about a very dark fairy tale world. I think you should watch it. And then next week, I'll continue on with another one. I'm going to lump the Hellboy movies up. I think I'm going to talk about Hellboy next week. I think, maybe. Might talk about, I can probably, one of these weeks, I'll probably talk about some of his produced movies, because he's done a bunch of really good produced movies too, and produced stuff that was really good. But it doesn't matter. I think I have enough to talk about. Anyways, I'm going to lump Hellboy 1 and 2 up together so I can get more in this month. Because I think, let's see, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, it's 5. Yeah, it should be enough. And I'll talk about Shape of Water probably again on this podcast too. So that's it for this week's episode. If you guys don't know, when this goes up tomorrow, January 3rd, that's the Wednesday, January 23rd, the guys and I will be doing a Facebook Live video of us eating super hot, spicy chicken wings live at 6 p.m. Mountain Time. If you go to the Facebook page, you'll be able to see it. If you don't watch it live, you can watch it on YouTube shortly following us doing it. It's all to promote the 200th episode of the main podcast that comes naturally podcast. If you guys haven't checked that out, it's weird that you found me, but that's the main podcast. Anyways, that's that. Check us out on Facebook live at 6 p.m. Mountain Time. Or just head over to the YouTube page, which I'm in the middle of redoing because it's all linked to my personal one and I'm going to separate them out. But anyways, it doesn't matter. You can get there from the Facebook page, facebook.com/comesnaturallypodcast. And I guess I'll talk to you guys next week. All right. As usual, let's be awesome.